This is our continuing coverage in the trial of Shanda Vander Ark, a twisted story of a mother who depraved her own child of food until the point of death, even employing her oldest son in this torturous charade. We now take you to the courtroom for our continuing coverage.
Good morning, Dr. DeYoung.
Good morning.
Welcome back to Muskegon.
Thank you.
You and I have met. It's been a while. I'm Fred Johnson.
Yes, we
have. I'd like to ask you a few more questions, if I may. And I guess where I want to go is right to the heart of the matter. You've ruled this matter to be a homicide.
Yes.
Were you provided with any other documents other than the physical body of this young man in terms of your evaluations?
Yes, I was.
What other documents were you provided?
I obtained as many documents as possible, and so I will give the list of that. Okay.
I like it shorter. Did you get any police reports?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so there was information in the police report that you used to describe and make it.
Yes.
And helping to make this determination. Okay. Do you recall if those police reports included any information regarding whether or not there were the young man refused eating, voluntarily stopped eating, or stopped eating, he stopped eating, hunger strikes, I think they called them in the police report.
There was some mention of those.
Okay, but you saw police reports, correct?
Yes, I did.
And you saw, and those, did those reports have, you recall who was, well, you recall if the mother was one of the people whose information was listed in that police report, her comments, her arguments, her information about her?
There was some early information provided by her, yes.
Okay. Anything from Paul Ferguson?
Yes.
Okay. And in the course of those police reports, there are occasions when an officer who's writing might offer an opinion, might offer an insight. Were there any of those in those police reports?
I didn't see much in the way of opinions. It was more recounting what was stated in interviews, okay. In very, you know, sort of brief sentences about what different individuals said.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Let me ask you this. You mentioned that 2 years ago, 2019, it's 4 years now, Mr. Ferguson, Timothy Ferguson here, was in the 46th percentile of someone his age.
Yes.
In terms of his weight and whatnot. Can you give us an idea what that means? Is a person with 46% percentile, would a person... Might a person at the 46th percentile rate be considered chubby or obese?
No, not if they're, I guess if that's their weight, uh-huh. And so kind of that piece about that would it correlates with how tall they are. So
okay.
If this person, let's say, at that time they did not get his height.
Yes.
Okay, but so let's say he's, if he's 95 pounds and 48 inches tall, you might say, oh, that is, it's more of a body mass index thing, which is used some on occasion. Body mass index is, you have to be careful with it because sometimes people with a lot of muscle mass will have a very high BMI, even though it's not unhealthy.
Okay.
But now I forgot your question.
That's okay, so did I.
Okay.
But you answered it, actually.
All right.
Okay. Were you ever given any photographs of Mr. Ferguson's siblings, so that you could make a visual comparison as to their body build types?
I had no photos of his siblings.
Okay, including Paul Ferguson. You didn't get to see him. Is that
I
correct?
Did not.
Okay. You mentioned that being emaciated diminishes the person's ability to fight off cold, okay?
Yes.
For lack of better terms. And sometimes they can't shiver. might a person, even under difficult circumstances, as Mr. Ferguson found himself in, might be visibly shivering?
Oh, yes, yeah, certainly. They would still shiver, but the capacity for shivering even to generate enough heat to compensate for the significant loss of body fat and body weight would also, it would be limited in how much your shivering can help.
Okay. One moment, please. Thank you, Dr. DeYoung. I don't have any further questions, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Roberts.
Just a few regrets. Thank you, Dr. Mr. Johnson asked you about a reference in the police report to a hunger strike. Is it possible that a person could die of starvation because they are on a hunger strike?
Yes.
And but for the reasons that the person is losing weight, is there any meaningful distinction for what the body goes through between if you're on a hunger strike or if you're denied access to food?
The physiological responses would be very similar.
And what are we talking about when we're talking about physiological responses, whether you're going through a hunger strike, whether you're denied access to food, whether you have something that's causing your body to not process food? What
right.
physiological responses would Timothy Ferguson be going through, no matter the cause of why he was weighed 69 pounds at the time of his death?
Right, and hunger strike is a broad term, too. And sometimes people refuse people, and oftentimes it's people who are imprisoned who will go on a hunger strike. They will lose weight, but some will say, "All right, I'm not eating, but I will drink fluids." Occasionally, hunger strike individuals on hunger strikes will take a protein shake or something. But by and large, if it's a hunger strike where they're still drinking water, their body weight will decrease if you're not eating at all. The body goes through a lot of physiological changes. Your ability to, in Timothy we saw it too, in some of the organs that are active in your immune system, they start to shut down. The heart gets smaller. The liver can goes through metabolic changes and is no longer able to produce the energy your body needs, and the liver does a lot of production. There's all of these changes that occur. Timothy was also, though, he was dehydrated, so he was not getting adequate water either, and that makes it even more complicated, and he's even then more prone to low blood pressure, and we were able to determine that by looking at these the concentrations of different substances, the urea, nitrogen, and creatinine in his eye fluid. You'd say he was clearly very dehydrated. You could tell by looking at him, too.
So you've talked about what the body is going through in terms of what's happening with internal organs. Outwardly, what is the body going through? What signs are there for a person who's having regular contact with a person who's either on a hunger strike or denied access to food?
Well, obviously, he's losing a lot of weight. He's gaunt. You're going to see that. You're going to see mark and diminish. But they'll be weakened. Their whole body. They have a vastly weakened state. Muscles begin are in atrophy, and their ability to walk long distances, to do anything is really markedly diminished.
When you talk about muscles atrophy, explain what that is.
Yeah, an atrophy just means that if your muscles, especially if they're going to start wasting away as well, your body will start breaking down muscle to try and gain energy, which then is counteractive as well.
If you're having regular contact with a person who's going through this process, are those signs going to be readily apparent?
Yes.
I want to show you what's been previously, and I think you had an opportunity to see at least one of these photographs this morning. I want to show you what I believe are people's 36A and B.
Okay.
again, out of respect for Timothy Ferguson, these aren't up on any monitors or anything, but if you could take a look at people's 36 A and B, I think you looked at A this morning. And those are photos taken apparently by Paul Ferguson and sent to the defendant in this case approximately 3 weeks before Timothy passed away. What you're looking at in those pictures, is that consistent with a person going through what you've described here today in terms of emaciation and weight loss?
It is. They are. Clearly, you can see all the bony prominences. You can see his ribs. His face is gaunt. He's lost the fat around his eyes. They appear sunken. That is consistent with what one would see.
And the legs, is there some evidence there in the legs?
Right,
as well?
The legs are very, very skinny because he's losing muscle. Your legs, primarily you have bone, but then you have muscle. And typically fat, that's all gone, but even the muscle's starting to leave as well.
And there's a text message actually associated with that leg photo, is that right?
Yes.
And because this is part of the record, if you could just read that text message again.
It says, also, it's no wonder he's hardly capable of standing.
So would that tend to support what you've indicated today, that there are some outward, obvious physical signs that Timothy Ferguson was going through, at least on June 13th, which was 3 weeks before he died?
Yes, he'd be very weak.
Now, Mr. Johnson asked you about those records from 2019, and I think you said that height wasn't taken in 2019, so it's difficult to make an analysis of whether or not Timothy was chubby or anything of that nature in 2019. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So without, in other words, you could be average weight, but if you're on the way low side of the height scale, it's more likely that you're going to appear heavier. If you're very tall, it's more likely that you're going to appear skinny, correct?
Right.
So you can't make a determination because you don't have a weight, or you don't have a height determination from 2019, correct?
I do not.
Okay. And if you need time to review this record, that's fine. But did you also obtain some records from 2017 for Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
And again, if you need some time to review those, please go ahead. But was there a specific cause that caused Timothy to be examined medically in 2017? This would have been now 5 years before he passed away.
Yeah, in 2017, I recall he was brought in because he was, and this was again in I believe Oklahoma, for inappropriate weight gain was the reason he was brought in at that time.
So in 2017, he was brought in because he was gaining too much weight?
Yes.
Finally, Doctor, Mr. Johnson asked you about the body going through the process of shivering as it goes through hypothermia and experiences those things. With the extreme weight loss and emaciation and dehydration that Timothy Ferguson had gone to, is it possible to even lose the ability to shiver?
It is possible. I think that at some point you're going to lose that ability to shiver. You're not going to have enough energy to shiver. But you still might. That might be something. It's just almost a primal thing that your body does.
But when we think about shivering, we all think about being out at a cold football game or being outside and we're kind of doing this and shaking for extended periods of time. Would that be happening with Timothy towards the end with his weight loss?
Well, it could be, but it's also possible. It certainly could. He could be shivering, but it's also possible that he doesn't have the capacity any longer. So if he's not shivering, it's probably more it's probably more alarming than if he were.
Thank you. Nothing.
Always one question we just can't get away from. So, and this is it, the 46 percentile thing. How do doctors determine where a person is in terms of their percentile?
Yeah, right. So and there were some other heights and weights from previous events as well, but they take, if they have a child,
right,
typically the growth charts are used for children,
right,
they will measure their height, and that gets plotted on there, for this specific age, they weigh this much, and then there's one for the height as well.
Okay, so even though you didn't have the height, whoever would have given you that information, that it was 46%, if he followed or she followed the procedure, they would have had the height and they would have had the weight, and that's how they came to the 46%. Is that correct?
The 46th percentile is purely for his weight.
Okay.
Okay? He's in the 46th percentile for his weight.
Okay.
And so that's why at the time of his death, he was in the 60th percentile for his height. So he's okay. Above average for his height. But he was less than one percentile for his weight.
Oh.
So there's two okay. different factors there.
So at the time he passed, he was above average for his height.
Yes.
And at the time, 2019, we didn't know what his height was. We just know he was right around that 50% mark for his weight.
For his weight.
Thank you.
If I could just clear that up, and I think I can do it with one question.
Yep.
It sounds like what you're saying is that the determination of the weight percentile and the height percentile are conducted independently of each other.
They are.
So, in other words, you look at every child with a weight, whatever that weight is, that's where the child falls, regardless of the height, and vice versa.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any follow-up to that, Mr. John?
No, sir.
All right. Mr. Weaver, can you grab the jury questions, please? All right, Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Johnson.
All right, doctor, we have one question. It says, how long does it take to go from 46% to 0%?
Good, yeah, great, good question. I would say that is likely, if there's no food whatsoever, not some sprinkled in there, it's still gonna take many, many weeks and likely some months to get to that point. But if there's, you know, that that is, they've done some studies on weight loss percentage in prisoners who have gone on hunger strikes, and they lose about, I think it was like 18% of their weight per certain amount per month or along those lines. And I better not quote that exactly, but it was a prolonged period of time, okay? But yet if there's food interspersed in there, that's going to change that somewhat.
So you're saying with complete denial of food, in other words, no nutrition whatsoever, you're talking about a matter of at least weeks, if not months.
Correct.
And if food is interspersed in there, I'm guessing it doesn't shorten that time period, it extends it.
Yes.
Nothing.
No questions.
Dr. Young, I do have one question. Does that change with water? Does that make a difference? So you're saying absolutely no food whatsoever would take weeks or months?
Well, right. So they're drinking water, yes, in those okay. scenarios where there was no food ingested, but they still were taking water. If you're not drinking water at all, you die much quicker. That's days.
Okay. All right. Any follow-up to that question?
No.
All right. Thank you, Dr. DeYoung. You can stand down. May this witness be excused, Mr. Roberts.
Yes.
And Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Any additional witnesses, Mr. Roberts?
I have no additional witnesses at this time. I would I believe that they'd have all been admitted by stipulation, but I would move for the admission of peoples 1 through, I believe it's 45. Yes, 1 through 45.
Okay. I'm assuming there's no objection, Mr. Johnson.
We've stipulated, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay.
Back to people, Russell.
All right. I think it's a good time to take. It's a little early for a morning break, but given the transition from the defense side, I think we'll go ahead and take a 15-minute break. Come back here at 10:15, please. Ready to go? Please rise.
All right, you may be seated. Record should reflect the jury is now secure in the jury room. Anything for the record before we recess, Mr. Roberts?
No, Your Honor.
And Mr. Johnson?
Yes, Your Honor. We would be bringing the motion when we return. Okay. Therefore, we'd ask that the jury not be brought in prior to hearing the motion.
Okay. I'm assuming, is there any statements you wish to put on the record when we return regarding your clients? I don't know if she's desiring to testify or not, but certainly do you wish to maybe make some statements or question her regarding that decision when we come back?
That would be appropriate.
Okay.
To answer the first question, yes, I intend to call her to testify.
Okay.
But I would ask the court to inform her of her options.
Okay. All right. We will do that.
Thank you.
So we are in recess. We're back on the record in 23110 FC, People versus Shonda Vander Ark. Jury is secured in the jury room. Mr. Johnson, I believe you have a motion for the court.
Yes, sir. At this point, we would move for a directed verdict of not guilty, Your Honor, on two bases. The first basis is, and my notes indicate, and talk to my staff here, that the proper jurisdiction has not been set in this matter. While the court has received information as to the address of this home, we don't think it's ever been established that this particular home is in Muskegon County or within the jurisdiction of this court. We recognize that folks from North Shore responded, but there was still, I don't think, any testimony from any witness saying this was within the court's jurisdiction, according to our notes. So we move that it be dismissed on that basis. Secondly, we were moving that it be dismissed on the basis that a reasonable person could not find guilt in this matter, that the testimony is virtually unanimous, that my client does not perform any of the conduct which would lead a reasonable person to believe that she's the one responsible for this. All these actions, even taken to the prosecutor's best light, the prosecutors were performed by Paul Ferguson and not my client. My client, quite frankly, and the testimony indicates that she held Paul back from doing some other things that he wanted to do, and therefore she is not the one responsible for this this homicide. Furthermore, there's indication that there's food in the home. There's indication that she kept food in the home, that she's responsible for that. There's further indication by the fact that those individuals under her care, which would be Paul and the younger son, G, were of healthy mind and body. Given all those factors, we don't believe there's enough for a reasonable person to find guilt in this matter. We'd ask that there be a directed verdict to that effect. Thank you.
Mr. Roberts.
Thank you. First, as it relates to the jurisdictional issue, Your Honor, I asked at least three different witnesses that the 4788 Marshall was in the city of North Charles County, Muskegon, State of Michigan, to my recollection. Officer Stefanich, I believe Officer Pieske, and certainly Lieutenant Hooksema all testified to the effect that that location was in the city of Norton Shores, County of Muskegon, State of Michigan. So I think that argument is without merit. As it relates to the other portion of the argument here, I understand this is a motion that Mr. Johnson does need to make, but I think there is ample evidence here from which a reasonable juror could conclude that Ms. Vander Ark had at least one of the states of mind requisite for a murder charge here, whether or not she had the intention to kill. On a personal level, I hope she didn't have the intention to kill. If you were going to kill somebody, I would hope you would do it a lot faster and a lot less torturous than the way that this was done. But she certainly did have a requisite state of mind to form the intent necessary to do either great bodily harm or to create a situation where great bodily harm was the natural result of her actions here. As to whether or not she actually physically did any of the things that were alleged to have happened here, Paul's testimony alone, as well as the text messages, established that she was not just the person who directed that these things to be done, and you don't get to use as a defense, well, I just said to do these things and somebody else did them. That alone is a basis for it to find that she is complicit in this charge, but also that she actively participated in a number of these things. Paul repeatedly testified that if he didn't administer the punishments, that she would administer those punishments, that it was essentially an effort between both of them at the times when she was at work and he would not be where. If she was at work, he was at home, he was responsible. If he was at work and she was at home, then she was responsible for doing these things. There's also been testimony from Paul that Timothy was in the ice bath after the ice bath right before he died, and that Shonda is the one that was actually administering the ice bath at that point. And the text message about dragging him back into the small room sent to Paul, that was one of the last text messages that we have, on July 5th, the day before, the morning, essentially the night before Timothy passes away and is discovered the next morning.
So again, I understand that the motion needs to be made to preserve certain appellate issues here, but I would indicate to the court that there is ample evidence for this court to conclude that Ms. Vander Ark had one of the requisite states of mind to commit a murder in this charge, as well as evidence that she did engage in the infliction of emotional or mental or physical harm, serious physical or serious emotional harm on a child, which is the basis of the child abuse first degree.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Roberts has indicated that his recollection is that at least three witnesses established jurisdiction for the court in terms of where this happened. Your response to that?
Your Honor, as the court is aware, a lot of things are going on while we're doing these matters. But I canvassed my staff here, and we don't recollect that phrase was used. We recollect that the address was used. However, we don't recollect that it was noted that it was in Norman Shores or that it was in the county of Muskegon. That's the phrase, I think, that offers the court this jurisdiction in this matter, and it doesn't reflect that in our notes. So, and quite frankly, it's one of the things we check off as we do a trial like this. So from our recollection, we don't see it, and we leave the court to its recollections.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, as to the jurisdiction of the court, I don't know if it was used in the exact terminology that Mr. Roberts indicated, but my recollection independently is that jurisdiction had been established through one or more of the witnesses. Now, Mr. Johnson, if you prefer the court to review the record, I'm happy to do that. My independent recollection is that jurisdiction was established through one or more of the witnesses, but I'll leave it to you, what you like the court to do.
Judge, we're satisfied with the court's recollection.
Okay, thank you. So the court is going to deny the directed verdict on that basis, the motion for directed verdict. As both parties know, pursuant to case law, a directed verdict of acquittal is appropriate only if considering all of the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. No rational trier of fact could find that the essential elements of the crime charge were proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a cite taken right from People versus Mihal, which is 454 Mish 1, 1997 case. That case, as well as those cases before it, indicate that the court is not permitted to make any sort of credibility determination in deciding a motion for a directed verdict. So although Mr. Johnson did somewhat attack Mr. Ferguson's credibility, the court cannot make a judgment call in regards to credibility. Based on the evidence that the court's heard so far, the court cannot find that no rational trier of fact. That's really what it comes down to, is essentially can any person, any rational trier of fact, and there has been enough evidence at least presented by the prosecution, taking that evidence in light most favorable to the prosecution, that a rational trier of fact could find, in this case, the essential elements of the crimes charged, specifically open murder, which could be first-degree felony murder, as well as second-degree murder, as well as child abuse in the first degree, were proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So based on that finding, the court is going to deny the motion for directed verdict. Anything else on that, Mr. Roberts?
No, thank
you. Mr. Johnson?
No, sir.
All right, now, Mr. Johnson, my understanding is your client intends to testify. Is that correct?
That is our intention, Your Honor, yes.
All right, and I'm assuming, and I know you very well, and you've spoken to her about this decision. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And how many times would you say you've spoken to her about this?
Virtually, well, we've discussed it for months, and okay. We came to the conclusion at least a month ago, and we've had, I think, three conversations. In the jail to this okay. effect, and then again during the course of this trial.
All right, Ms. Vander Ark, do you understand that you have a Fifth Amendment right not to testify?
Yes, sir.
The jury would be instructed that if you did not testify, that they could not use that against you. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Have you had an ample opportunity to talk to your attorney, Mr. Johnson, about that decision?
Yes, sir.
And you feel you have enough information to make an informed, intelligent decision?
Yes, sir.
And are you choosing to testify?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. Any questions, the court, that you wish to inquire about the defendant, Mr. Roberts?
No, thank you,
Mr. Johnson?
No, sir, thank you.
All right. Please have a seat.
Anything before we bring the jury out, Mr. Roberts?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Johnson and I just discussed briefly, as I had indicated to the court, that before even the jury selection process, we discussed the two videos, which were sort of a late discovery, and discussed under which circumstances I would use those. And I indicated at that time that the court adopted the finding here that the second video, which I'll refer to essentially as the 911 video, would be something that I would be seeking to use, certainly if Ms. Maynard chose to testify, and it now does appear that she would do so. Whether or not it's played during her testimony or played as part of my rebuttal case, that I would certainly do that. So I anticipate being able to do that. And the other, the second video, the one that we also discussed, that I had indicated my choice is I do not want to show that video to the jury, regardless of any discovery issues that may exist in the case. However, because Ms. Vander Ark is going to testify, I do think it's necessary for me to ask questions about that, and part of that might involve showing maybe just her the video. I would not show it for the whole jury, but I think I would have a right to ask her questions, because it is the last time that she had contact with Timothy before he died. And I think I have an opportunity to ask her under the circumstances, but also because it goes directly to refute statements that she made to the police about how she discovered Timothy and what she had done with him the night before. My intention would be to not play that video again for the jury, but if Ms. Vander Ark is unable to answer the questions because she doesn't recall or makes an inconsistent statement, I certainly do envision a scenario where that is played, if at least for her, and then if not for the jury, if we get to that point. If that happens, Mr. Johnson and I have discussed, there's some younger members in the audience today, that person should be out of the courtroom if that happens. It's that disturbing. But that's not my call to make, but Mr. Johnson and I have discussed that as a potential.
So. All right, well, I just want to understand, so you would intend to use it potentially to refresh your recollection?
Potentially, or a prior inconsistent statement, perhaps. I can envision a number of different scenarios. It starts with me asking her the question. I understand that. I understand that in order to challenge a person's recollection or to refute with a prior inconsistent statement, you have to confront them with what has taken place first, and I fully intend to explore that as a line of questioning and cross-examination with Ms. Vander Ark. As it relates to whether or not I need to actually play the video, a lot of it just depends on what her response is to that. I'm certainly not going to play it as if she gets up and acknowledges that she did and said the horrible things that she does, then I don't think there certainly isn't a need to play that for the jury, and the court would not allow that because she's adopting essentially that she did make those statements and take those actions, and it would not be appropriate to play that for the jury because it would be done only to inflame the jury, and the evidence would have already come in. But it's grounds for cross-examination. And again, whether or not even she sees that video depends on what her response is to the question.
Mr. Johnson.
Your Honor, thank you. For purposes of this conversation and for a possible appellate record, I'm going to refer to the two videos. There's one while Timothy is still alive, and there's one after he's deceased. It's the one while he's still alive that we've agreed that we wouldn't enter into evidence. There is no agreement in terms of limiting Mr. Roberts in terms of his ability to, as he described it, to cross unless there's a specific court rule. So we're not objecting to that in theory. We'll see what the circumstances are, what questions are being asked, and then determine at that point if we want to object to its use even for that purpose. As for the purpose, the post-death video, that video is the one that we've agreed can be admitted if he chooses to do so. I would still have concerns about that video being played in open court. There are ways we can get around that, but certainly neither of these videos I think are appropriate for people who don't know they're coming and who haven't agreed to watch this stuff. This is just difficult for both of them to watch. So what I'm saying is I'm trying to agree with most of what Mr. Roberts said. I think we may be, while we're appropriate in talking about it now, I think that the final determination probably would be governed by the facts on the ground at the time he attempts to use them. So we want the court to be aware of those issues, but I would ask at this point to withhold any rulings until such time as the materials are presented for evidence.
Okay. And maybe I was mistaken. It was my understanding that the first pre-death
video was never going to be admitted, Mr. Roberts. Is that?
And that is still my intention, Judge. Okay. But I guess there's always an out with the lawyer, right? I guess the only caveat to that is I don't know what Ms. Van der Ark is going to testify to when I ask her the questions about that. And I don't think the fact that we've made that agreement or that there might be some discovery issues there gives her carte blanche to get on the stand and lie about what took place. So my hope would be that she would just answer the questions truthfully and honestly about what is on that video, and then it doesn't even need to be shown to her. If she needs her recollection refresh about what took place, or if she makes a prior inconsistent statement about that, I think I still have an ability to confront her with that prior inconsistent statement, and I think I can do that without even playing back for the jury as well to see if that changes her testimony. But if she absolutely refuses to acknowledge that what we all see on that video is what actually took place, I think that is a scenario here where she doesn't get to just get up there and say that this didn't happen. So that's what my concern is. And I think that's what Mr. Johnson's alluding to when he's indicating that we really need to have a determination of the facts and circumstances at the time. And I'm happy to take a break at that point. When we get to that point, to have the jury excused, and we can really drill down a little bit more on that particular issue. But I don't want to play that video for the jury. I do not want to play that video for the jury. And Mr. Johnson's correct about the other video. We did discuss that, and I think there's certainly some evidentiary value in playing that or at least asking Ms. Van der Ark questions about that. And it is likely that at the conclusion of that, I may recall one of the officers to just admit that video because there is some independent evidentiary value as it relates to that because it goes directly to statements that she made to the police at the time about the discovery of Timothy and how things happened. So that one I don't think we have much of a disagreement about. And again, the concerns about folks in the audience seeing or hearing some of those videos, I think, can be addressed when we get to that point. So I guess that's my position. The first video, I don't want to play it for the jury, but I can see one narrow path here, and that all depends on Ms. Van der Ark, that becomes something that the jury actually has to see. If that happened, I would not play it for the gallery.
Mr. Johnson, I just want to be under... So what Mr. Roberts is saying is that he envisions at least some sort of instance where the pre-death video could be played. And my understanding of what you're saying is that you're acknowledging that possibility. Is that correct?
No, sir, it's not. My recollection is, of course, recollection is that video is not going to be played regardless and on the circumstance, given what he's already said is just too prejudicial and given the fact that it was given late. So my recollection is that we wouldn't play that as an evidentiary piece under any circumstances. The part where I'm agreeing with Mr. Roberts is if my client needs her recollections refreshed or there's another legal basis for her to see it, that's not part of any agreement. That part, as long as there's an evidentiary requirement or rule or that allows them to do that, then that's still on the table. We didn't have any discussions of that issue. And certainly, he's not bound by something he didn't agree to. But I do believe the parties did agree that the first video, the pre-death video, would not be used as the evidentiary piece that presented to the jury under any circumstances. And that's our position at this point.
Okay, Mr. Roberts.
Your Honor, I'll accept whatever ruling the court wants to make here, obviously, and do that with respect here. But again, this all depends on Ms. Van der Ark.
Well, hold on, Mr. Roberts, listen. Yeah. My recollection of our discussion was simply this. There was two videos turned over very late by the City of Norton Shores Police Department. That was not the prosecutors, did not have it in their position or their possession. And as a result, those are not turned over until, I believe, last Friday, correct?
Yes. Well, called me on Thursday and I saw them on Friday.
So the pre-death video was one of those videos. There was a discussion about potentially adjourning this trial. And the people's position at that time was, if the court is simply going to adjourn it based on the possible admission of that video, then we would rather agree to simply keep it out. That way this trial could proceed this week. That was my recollection.
Sure. I'd say that's accurate, yes.
Okay. So listen, these are agreements that we make. Mr. Johnson is saying, essentially, if I now allow that in, that creates a real issue for him, I would think, Mr. Johnson, that
well, wait a minute, if this would have gotten in or under any circumstances whatsoever, then he would have asked for an adjournment. Am I correct by that, Mr. Johnson?
You're correct, Your Honor.
So based on us moving forward, I want to make sure, I understand you're saying, well, I'm putting it on you, Judge, but I'm going to hold people to their agreements. And my understanding was that that was the agreement of the two attorneys. Is that correct?
That is what we agreed to, Judge. And again, I guess maybe there could have been a little bit better clarity. I will accept that as the court's ruling, because again, it's my preference to not play this video. And I am perfectly willing to accept at this point that I have the opportunity to, at a minimum, ask Ms. Van Der Ark questions about it, and then if she's unable to recall those events, or if she provides an inconsistent statement, that I can certainly confront her with those without presenting that to the jury. No. That's acceptable.
I think you're not objecting to that, Mr. Johnson. You're saying, listen, if it's being used as a non-evidentiary tool to refresh recollection or something like that, you don't have an objection to that, but in terms of evidence being admitted to the trier of fact, which is the jury, you have an objection to that.
That's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to make a ruling right now. It's not going to be shown as an evidentiary piece. That's based on the agreement between the parties, part of the agreement to not adjourn this trial. It can be used for other purposes, certainly, but it cannot be admitted to the jury as a piece of evidence. But obviously the post-death video, as we discussed, was essentially fair game. I think, Mr. Johnson, you'd agree with that, correct?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Roberts, you'd agree with that too,
yes,
correct?
Sir.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Any other issues, Mr. Roberts?
No.
Mr. Johnson?
No, sir, and thank you.
All right. Let's bring the jury in. Please rise.
For the young man in the courtroom, he was asked to leave, and I don't know why he's back in here, ma'am.
I don't know if I clarified just for that or the whole time, so that could be on my fault.
Okay. Well, this is going to be very sensitive information, and I don't think it's appropriate for, quite frankly, anyone, but we are adults in here. I don't believe this person is older than 18, and I'm not going to allow a young man to be exposed to this. So, ma'am, I'm going to ask that you, if he's old enough to be left in the hall alone, you certainly can stay. If he's not, then I'd have to ask you to step out. You understand? Okay. Thank you. Yeah. All right. You may be seated. All right, Mr. Johnson, you can call your first witness.
Your Honor, the defense calls Chandra Van Der Ark.
All right, Mr. Van Der Ark, if you can come around here, please.
Stand in front of that chair. Raise your right hand, please.
Raise your right hand, please. In this matter now pending, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do, Mr.
All right, put your hand down, grab a seat. Please state your name for the record, spelling your first name and last.
Shanda, S-H-A-N-D-A, Van Der Ark, V-A-N-D-E-R, space, capital A-R-K.
Thank you, Ms. Van Der Ark. You're being called to testify in your own cases. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
And to do that, you have to make sure that everyone can understand you, correct?
Yes, sir.
With you, and knowing you as I do, I don't think volume's going to be a problem with you?
Probably not, sir.
Talking fast, maybe?
Yes, sir, it might.
Okay, so this is, are you nervous?
Yes, sir.
This is stressful?
Yes, sir, very.
So you're going to be, questions going to be thrown at you fast and furious. You've seen how trials work, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And under those circumstances, you may speed up again, as I do.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You may be reminded from time to time to slow down just a little bit. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Let's make sure everyone understands you. You've been sitting through this trial since the beginning, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you were arrested for these offenses alleged back when?
July 7th of 2022.
Okay. So you've been living with this thing for more than, what, 18 months?
17 months, yes,
17
sir.
Months. So you know what we're talking about, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you understand the allegations against you?
Yes, sir.
And that it also helps that you have a legal background, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The things they said about how well you did in school and all those things, were those all true?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I don't want you sitting there and regaling this, but the things about cum laude and going to law school, all that stuff is true.
It was magna cum laude, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. All right. Let's go back to the very beginning. When did Timothy come to your care?
May of 2021.
prior to that, who had physical and legal custody of Timothy?
My ex-husband.
Okay. And when he sent, and how did it happen that you ended up with custody then?
My ex reached out to me stating that Timothy was, he could no longer handle him, that he was pushing his buttons, and that he needed to send him to live with me.
Okay. And you agreed to that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Had you ever lived with Timothy during his...
When he was younger, yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So you agreed to accept him into your home?
Yes, sir.
And who was living in your home at the time?
Myself, my husband, Adam, Paul Ferguson, and then my little man, G.
Okay, that's what we've been calling G, correct?
It's really hard to do, yes, sir.
Okay, do the best you can. Okay, so they're all living in your home, and then Timothy joins you, correct?
Yes, sir.
When Timothy's joining you, did your ex-husband ever make any effort to transfer legal custody to you?
We discussed it, but he never did actually sign anything, no, sir.
Okay. And without legal custody, how do you get Timothy into school?
You can't.
And without legal custody, how do you get medical treatment for Timothy?
You can't.
Did your husband at least send his, I assume he had medical insurance for Timothy, did he send that?
He did not send me. I requested his medical card, his insurance card, and he never sent it to me.
Now, you heard the testimony that Timothy saw the doctor in 2019. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
That was a year before you received him?
2 years before I received him.
2 years before. So in the prior 2 years before you received him, as far as you know, based on what you heard here, your ex-husband never took him to the doctor?
As far as I know, yes, sir.
How do you know if he had medical insurance for this young man?
He told me he did.
Okay. But he never sent it to you?
No, sir.
Okay. What was your financial situation once Timothy arrived and your husband had a stroke?
After the stroke, we lost my husband's income, and it was paycheck to paycheck, not even paycheck to paycheck. Almost everything was paid late. I was struggling. I asked Paul for help with groceries sometimes because we were struggling.
Okay. And Paul was working full-time?
He was working part-time.
He's working at Applebee's?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So he's working part-time. And so were you receiving any child support?
No.
So the entire financial burden was on you?
Correct.
Could you have afforded daycare for any of your children?
Absolutely not, no.
And could you have afford any extra expenses other than the ones that you were providing for?
No.
What type of expenses were you able to provide for this family?
Just basic living expenses.
Rent?
Yes, sir.
Utilities?
Yes, sir.
Food?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that leads to the next question I have for you. You had monitors and cameras in your home, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And the impression from the testimony I heard is that it was for the sole purpose of ensuring that Timothy could not get the food. Is that accurate?
No.
Why did you have all those monitors and cameras in your home?
When Timothy came to live with us, his stepmother informed me that they'd had motion sensors. They weren't as tech savvy as I was. I worked in tech before law school. I worked in tech support for several years. But they had motion sensors because she told me that she didn't sleep at night. She only slept when he was at school because he was into everything. And so because my younger child, he used to, when he was about two, he would take all his clothes off. So we started putting a camera in his room. And then once we moved to the Marshall Road location, it was bi-level. My husband was born with a disability. My husband was wheelchair bound. So we had an extra wheelchair that we kept on the upper level. That's where the master bedroom was. But that way, if G was down in his bedroom, my husband could talk to him through the camera and have him come up. It was much easier. My husband could crawl down the steps before the stroke, but we didn't want him to have to crawl up and down those steps.
Okay. and again, let's go back to the issue of food. Was food the only reason why you felt you had to monitor Timothy, or were there other issues?
There were plenty of issues, sir.
So, well, first of all, what we've heard some testimony as to Timothy's special needs. What were his special needs?
He was on the autism spectrum, but he was completely verbal, and he was grade level in school. He was not behind in school at all. He was diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. He was diagnosed as bipolar and sensory processing disorder. I heard Paul mention physical disability. He didn't have any. Now, Timothy, when he first got there, said he had a physical disability, and I asked his stepmom about it to make sure, and she said, no, he was not coordinated at all. The first summer that he lived with us, my youngest was playing baseball, and Timothy actually mentioned, because we had planned to put him in public high school, I'm going to try out for the baseball team, and I didn't say anything to him, but I remember thinking, sorry, sweetie, there's no way. You don't have the coordination for that.
And he liked to take, well, you tell me, did he like to take things apart?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Can you give some examples?
He took batteries apart. He took toys apart, my youngest son's toys. If he could get a hold of anything from Paul's room, he would take, like, mostly it was Legos. Paul still had Legos. He, at one point, messed with our water heater.
What do you mean?
He actually turned the gas off to the water heater. He knocked out the pilot light and then turned the gas off as well at different points.
Okay. Did you have any concerns as to whether or not this, his predilections, his desire to get into things, might be a safety hazard for either him or somebody else in the home?
Extremely. I was extremely concerned about that, yes, sir.
So was it just your desire to monitor Timothy, or did you also have a younger child in the home that you want to monitor?
We had both.
Okay. Who did you want to monitor? One or the other, or both?
Both.
Okay. All right. So you set up these video and audio cameras, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And alarms on the doors?
Those didn't get installed until about 3 weeks before he passed away.
Okay. And motion sensors?
Yes, sir. Okay. He got around the motion sensors multiple times.
Were you able to stay home and personally monitor your children?
No, I had to work full time.
Okay. Were you able to get Timothy into school?
No, we were not. We tried to enroll him in Mona Shores High School, and Mona Shores told me that my ex, I guess Timothy had damaged a Chromebook in Oklahoma, and because my ex owed money on that, they would not send his records up to us. So we were not able to enroll him. So I found online homeschool curriculum that I had to monitor, but I enrolled him in that.
Let me make sure I understand. Was it your original intention to put Timothy into public schools?
Yes, sir. We started the process. I filled out the paperwork. Because of my work schedule, I couldn't actually take paperwork to Mona Shores. My husband did that. Adam did that. But yes, we did try to get him enrolled.
Okay. And the youngest child, G, was he in public schools?
No, he was homeschooled.
What about Paul? Do you know if he was homeschooled or if he, when he got to you, was he still in school?
No, he had graduated high school.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, you mentioned that you weren't able to stay at home and care for your children at home, in the home, as a stay-at-home parent. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what type of, I assume you're out working?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Explain to the jury the work that you did during the period of time that Timothy arrived in your home.
I was, when he first arrived, I was still studying for the bar exam, so my husband was working full-time, and I was just doing, I trained dogs on the side, everything from basic obedience up through different types of service dogs for other people, and so I had a couple of dog training clients, but mostly I was studying for the bar exam. I also was an intern here in this courthouse.
That pay a lot of money?
Oh, it was not paid at all, sir.
Okay.
It was the week of the bar exam. My judge that I worked for here as a law clerk informed me of this position that was opened in Waco County, and she knew that judge referred me, and that's when I did the interview, and I started work, I think it was two days after I completed the bar exam.
Okay. Was that a paid position?
Yes, it was.
Was it lucrative enough where you didn't have to do any other work?
Well, with my husband's income, it was.
Okay. But your husband's income stopped when he got sick?
When he had the stroke, yes.
Okay. So at that point, was it enough income to provide for you and your family?
No.
Were you receiving any other outside incomes?
My older brother lives in the home that I still own in Oklahoma, and he paid rent to us.
Okay.
But it wasn't a lot. It was that went towards our house rent.
Child support?
No. My ex, one of the siblings was forgotten yesterday. There's five total. We talked about the four boys. I also have a daughter. She is now 19, but she stayed down with her dad.
Okay.
So we each had one, so there was no child support. And because of child support on the other four kids, I actually was still paying my ex child support. It was still being deducted from my check.
Okay. So you had that. That's another deduction from your income.
$1,000 a month. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. Were you also doing tutoring when you went to the judge who was paying you? Were you still tutoring or doing any other outside work?
Not at that. I was doing the dog training.
Okay. Let me ask you this. What time in the morning did you leave to go to work?
I usually left the house about 6:30.
And what time, on average, were you getting home?
About 6 o'clock.
Okay. So we're talking about 12 hours away from the home.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Those monitors... the video cameras in your home, you were able to view them while at work?
From my phone, occasionally, yes, sir.
Okay. But you were still working?
Yes, sir. I didn't view them at all until after the stroke. I mean, because my husband was there, or we had arrangements where my husband was off certain days of the week. Paul was off one day, specifically one day a week, so he took care of Gabriel and Timothy. And then the other 2 days that I needed care for Gabriel when my husband was working, he actually went to my in-law's house down in West Olive.
May I approach the witness for just a moment, John?
You may.
You said Gabriel's age.
There's more to come in the trial of Shanda Vander Ark. Here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Stay with us.